Lorenza Wood, and I am in Barrington, Rhode Island, and today I am interviewing my parents, Helga and Jerry.
And I am Jerry Bell. I am in Conifer, Colorado.
And I am Helga Bell. I am in Conifer, Colorado.
All right, so let's pick up the story where we left off last time. You were in Vernon, Texas, after having just arrived in the United States when you were first married.
Right, and that was in 1965, May 66. Okay, so we were there in 1966, and that was Helga's first introduction to my parents and family and so forth. We drove cross country in a Volkswagen square bike, blue Volkswagen square bike, which we had, I think we talked before about staying some time in New York to wait for that to arrive. So anyway, we had an interesting trip cross country. Helga's introduction to America and Dairy Queens and those types of things, McDonald's and so forth as we drove across country. And she liked Dairy Queen at that time, which was surprising. But I remember that we stopped at Dairy Queen and she liked the ice cream there. So we stopped every time, well, once a day or something like that as we drove there. In Vernon, I think she was well received by my parents and my family, my sisters and so forth. And I don't know actually who was there at that time. That's, my sisters weren't there. Or were they? Where was Carolyn at that time?
In Fort Sill.
She was in Fort Sill?
Yes.
You sure?
Yeah.
Okay. So my sister was at Fort Sill, Oklahoma. Her husband was in the Army also. He had been in the National Guard in Texas, and that they had been deployed, activated and deployed to Vietnam. And he was injured there. He had received some wounds, shrapnel wounds in his leg, and eventually had to get out of the Army because of that. That's not right. He was not at Fort Sill because Keith and Carolyn. Yeah, that could have been. I don't know. I've forgotten that part exactly. That could have been. That maybe that happened later. I'm not sure of the timing on that. Anyway, we visited the farm for we probably stayed there about 2 weeks. I don't remember exactly how long we were there. We met some of my friends and some of the local ladies got together a wedding shower for Helga, and we went to my friend's home, and they held it there, and a lot of the local ladies came because they were curious, of course, to see me, but more curious to see Helga, see what a...
Who you picked up in Europe.
Who I picked up in Europe, exactly. But no, everybody was, of course, very nice, and it all worked out very well. Everybody obviously liked her, so that one went okay. So anyway, we stayed there for a couple of weeks. I showed her around the neighborhood, my school, et cetera, my high school. And then we took off to Tacoma, Washington, to Fort Lewis, Washington, mm-hmm. which is Fort Lewis is just outside of Tacoma. And as you well know, you were born there. And my assignment there was to a basic training company. This was the time when, again, mid-60s when Vietnam was just getting started in earnest, and there at Fort Lewis, a basic training center was opening. There was an old area of Fort Lewis, which was a World War II barracks, which it was basically had been abandoned for I don't know how many years. And so all of us new guys who came there were assigned to open it up. And so we literally went in and with buckets and mops and hammers and saws, et cetera, and cleaned it all up and fixed what was broken, et cetera. And then within, I don't know how many weeks or months, all of a sudden, we were given, 200 raw soldiers to train for basic training and so forth. And of course, Some of the sergeants that were with us, with me, they had experience. It was a new, specialty that came around. They were called drill sergeants. That's the first time I had ever heard of them, with the Smokey Bear hats and so forth. You've probably seen those back in your day, even. And I think they still have those to this day, is the latest that I've seen from basic training and training companies and so forth. They still wear those hats and so forth. Anyway, a lot of those had some experience, and so that were, they were invaluable to us, because us rookies, I mean, I knew about artillery, but I didn't know a whole lot about basic training, because I didn't go to basic training. So I didn't really know, except from stories, what it was like. Your mother, at first, we were assigned quarters, but we didn't get them for some time. I don't remember, some weeks. Do you remember how long it took? And so initially, we had to stay with a friend of ours from Europe. He had been with us in the 3rd Armored Cavalry Regiment, where we met in Baumholder there. And he was assigned to the 4th Infantry Division. And the 4th Infantry Division was in the process of training and getting ready to leave for Vietnam. And so anyway, he was, I don't remember exactly how that happened or how we got in touch with him or anything else. But anyway, he offered to let us stay at his apartment, because so many people were coming in. There was no place to stay, even in a motel. It was just everything was taken. Everything was rented. You couldn't find a place to rent. And so we were fortunate that we were able to stay at his place. And we stayed there, I don't know, some days. I don't remember how long we stayed waiting for our place, for our little apartment on base and so forth. And a funny story about that, I always remember this. I don't remember his name. I can see his face. But he came back from training while we were there. And as you always were when you were out on a training exercise, you were worn out from lack of sleep and so forth. And what I remember is he came back and went in to take a bath and didn't come out for a long, long time. And so finally I went to the door to check on him to see if he was okay. And I heard this loud snoring. And he had, and I went ahead and took the liberty of opening the door, and he was, to be sure he was okay, and he was in the tub just with his mouth open, laid back, just sound asleep, snoring really loud. So I just let him sleep until he finally woke up and came out. And I don't know if I ever told him that I did that or not, to check on him like that, but I always remember that, hearing him snore like that. So anyway, we finally got a little 2-bedroom apartment. And of course, that was, when was that? That was the middle of the summer, I guess. May, June, probably. June of 66. And mom wasn't too long, far along. Well, she was, what, 2 or 3, couple of months along in her pregnancy with you. And so she stayed home mostly and took care of the apartment, and we bought a few things that we could afford, not much, but we got enough. The Army, of course, supplied the basics of, you know, a couple of beds, and I don't think we even had a couch or anything. We had a kitchen table. We had to buy a couch, or I remember we did. I don't think we had a couch, and I think we bought a desk and maybe a chair. I don't know. Pretty sparse.
And this is living in quarters. So quarters are the apartments that are assigned to the sergeant on one part of the post and the officers on another part of the post. And I was known, I was the only female person that went for walks on a daily basis. We bought an old stroller, a used stroller or buggy to put once you were born, but I went for walks while you were baking. And They all thought I was absolutely out of my mind. I didn't have a dog on a leash. Every bird knew me, every dog in the neighborhood, and all the people thought I was absolutely crazy. I remember that about Fort Lewis, Washington.
Yeah. Well, anyway, we were there, and we only stayed there about a year. And again, I stayed with the basic training as a company commander there for all of that time. And it was interesting for a lot of different reasons, but again, the draft was still in force at that time. And we've got characters like you wouldn't believe coming through basic training. I mean, a couple of guys I remember in particular at different times, and they had nothing to do with each other, but they came through proclaiming they had hair down to the, you know, this was the hippie days and so forth. They had hair down to their waist, which was nothing unusual. A lot of kids came in there, and of course we shaved that off immediately, which didn't make a lot of them happy. But a lot of those, a couple in particular, came in proclaiming they were Jesus, and we couldn't cut their hair. And so, of course, we got a kick out of that as we cut their hair off. And those, that type of thing. But a lot of interesting people, a lot of very good people that came through. And I don't know, did we talk about the before about the Dallas Cowboys group that came through? It's kind of an interesting story. Again, back in those days, a lot of guys tried to join the National Guard to avoid the draft. You couldn't avoid the military completely unless you went to, if you were eligible, right age and physically qualified and so forth, unless you became what was then called a draft dodger. But a lot of people, as you may remember, went to Canada. They left and because they didn't want to be involved. And that's, of course, an entirely different story. But anyway, once in our cycle, there were 8-week cycles. And so we had several cycles turned over during the year that I was there as a company commander. Anyway, three Dallas Cowboys came in, and what had happened is and again, there's a lot of stories about that. People used their influence to get into the Guard because there were only so many slots, and there were a whole lot more people wanted to join the Guard than were available. Well, three Dallas Cowboys, all of them were rookies. They had all been draftees for the Cowboys, and the Cowboys in the 60s were America's team. And so they were very popular, the Cowboys were. And so there were a lot of rumors about how they got into the National Guard, but and I don't doubt that the main rumor was is that some local politicians probably used their influence to get three slots for these guys to go to get in the National Guard, go to basic training, and then they knew that within 6 months they'd be out. And so this was, or less than 6 months, they only had to go, I think they had to go to basic, and then they had to go to advanced individual training. So a total, I guess, of maybe 4 months. I don't remember now, that all that's changed since then, of course. Anyway, we had these three cowboy players, potential players. They were all rookies and they were in the company, and they were all, of course, very physically fit. I mean, no one else could touch them from a physical standpoint. But what was interesting about them is they were three very different characters. One of them was just a big dude. He was a lineman, and he had a loud voice and was gregarious and funny, and everybody loved him. And he even ended up, before the end of the cycle, he ended up, the drill sergeant, letting him march the company around because he was very musical and he could sing, and he learned the cadence calls and so forth, and he could take that air company just around it. You could hear him all over the post too. He was one of those type guys. And then another one of them was just the opposite. He was very cold, very reserved, and acted very privileged. I mean, he was very sour, I guess you would say, and so forth. I mean, he did his job because he knew that we had the power over him. If we wanted to, we could recycle him through as many cycles as we wanted. We could have kept him there forever if we'd have wanted to until we kicked him out. And then he would have been in real big trouble. So he knew that. So he did just enough to get by. And the one that was the big loud guy, he was really into it. I mean, he would probably become a lifetime soldier if he hadn't been a cowboy. And then the third guy was kind of in between. He was just there, did his thing and so forth. But again, remembering two stories about them, the guy who was the no one liked, and that was the sour guy and so forth. I remember one time, and I've thought about that many times, and I always have kind of regretted not doing something about it. But one time we had visitors hours on Sundays. Families only could come, and I think there was a 2-hour period on Sunday afternoon they could visit from, 12 to 2 or something like that. And we had a big open warehouse with tables set up and water, and sometimes had entertainment for them there and so forth, that families could come. But one time, I didn't go to every session there on Sundays, but most of the time I did. I'd at least check in, but, different sergeants were assigned, and some of my lieutenants were assigned to be there just to supervise and be sure everything. But anyway, I came in one time, and this guy who no one liked was sitting with two well-dressed guys, black suits and white tie or white shirts, red ties and so forth. And he had come in claiming that these were his parents. Two guys were his parents. And so I've always regretted not, they were his agents is who they were. And everybody knew that. And I knew that immediately. And I decided just to let it slip. And I've regretted that to this day, that I didn't go over and order them out of that place. I've thought of that off and on over the years. I could kick myself for not going over and saying, well, since you lied to him, we're going to recycle this guy. So he's going to miss spring training or whatever you call it there, summer camp or whatever it was, which would have ruined his career. But I decided to, again, let it go. But I've always regretted that, not at least going over and challenging those two dudes about, lying. I mean, it's what they did. They lied. They were his family, but everybody knew they weren't. And then the other thing is, and again, I don't know if we talked about this or not, one of those guys cost the Cowboys the Super Bowl. That next winter, they all made the team, because I kind of tracked them, of course, because I was a big Cowboys fan in those days. Tom Landry, I don't know if you've heard of him or not, but he was a famous coach back in the day. He was still coaching them then, and they played Green Bay in what was called the Ice Bowl. And that, in Green Bay that year, the Super Bowl was played, and they forget what the temperature was, but everything was frozen. I mean, it was below zero, I think, or something, because it was played in Green Bay. That might not even have been the Super Bowl. I don't know when the Super Bowl started. Maybe it was just the NFL championship. I don't know. But anyway, it was the final game. But anyway, one of those guys, the one in the middle, not the one, the good guy or the bad guy, but the other guy, on the final drive of Green Bay, he got a holding penalty. He was a defensive back, I don't know, linebacker, safety or something, I don't know. But anyway, he got a holding penalty on the fourth down. Green Bay's fourth down, Cowboys were ahead, and if they had held Green Bay on that fourth down, they would have won the game. All they had to do is run out the game. But he got a holding penalty on the fourth down play from Green Bay. They got the ball, went down, and Bart Starr scored. I remember who scored. Can you believe that? I remember that trivia. But anyway, that's my cowboy. That's the closest I ever got to a cowboy in all my years with that. So that took a long time to tell that story. I shouldn't have told all that.
Wow. We'll never get – and we moved in with the Army. Whenever they moved your dad, we had to go. Sometimes we stayed in a place 7 months, 9 months, a year at the most.
And we stayed there until – the following summer, And from there, everything was routine. I mean, of course, you were born in 67 then. And then when we left there, and I don't remember, that would have been, she was probably 6 months old.
Yeah.
In probably the summer. The next assignment was to Fort Sill. I went to, I was an artilleryman, and I went to what's called the career course there, which is a normal routine for an artillery person and so forth. Like all the branches have their own career course, it's called. But a memorable time there was drive. You, of course, don't know anything about this, but we drove down Highway 1. We picked it up as soon as we could in Oregon, I think. Or did it start? You remember that? I think it starts in Oregon, Highway 1 along the coast. And somewhere, anyway, as quick as we could pick it up when we left Tacoma. I don't think it goes all the way up into Washington. I think it's in Oregon or Northern California, wherever we could pick it up. We picked it up and drove through California, Oregon, California, and all the way down. My sister, Brenda, she and her husband were in, was it San Diego? It was right outside, Chula Vista.
Chula Vista.
Just outside of San Diego. And so we spent several days driving down the coast, just taking our time. We were in no hurry. We probably had a 2 or 3 weeks, a month, I don't know, to get to our next assignment in Fort Sill. And very enjoyable. I still remember a lot of the scenes. And of course, you've seen some of the pictures, probably. I'm sure you have. A bus driving down through there. I'll never forget, especially driving across the Bay Bridge, San Francisco Bay Bridge. You know, that was a big deal for us to see that for the first time. And of course, later we saw it many times, walked across it and everything else. But that first time when you come out of the hills there, and there it is, there's San Francisco and the bridge in front of you and so forth. That's quite a sight. We drove just through San Francisco. I don't remember what route we took through there, but I do remember we got through San Francisco that night and spent the night in Santa Cruz, California, just south of San Francisco. Then we drove on down the coast through all the normal places you would know, went down again to Chula Vista, spent 2 or 3 days with Brenda, I think, and then drove west, again headed across the, not Utah, Arizona and so forth. And I guess kind of a big thing, two things I remember from that part of the trip were the visiting the what do you call that
petrified forest
somewhere in, I think it's in Arizona.
Yep.
And big petrified logs everywhere. It was really an interesting place, and I see pictures come up on my Kindle every now and then for that. And then the Grand Canyon. You saw the Grand Canyon. You probably don't remember that, but you saw the Grand Canyon for the first time. We just drove to the rim, south rim, literally stopped, looked over the rim, and then drove away.
Took some pictures.
Took some pictures. Well, we didn't have reservations or anything, traveling, and so, but we did want to see the, at least look into the Grand Canyon. And as you know, we've been back many times since then. In fact, I just, side note, I just sent Spencer, mom baked some cookies and sent him some cookies the other day. And I, going through my, all the books and brochures and so forth, I found a bunch of brochures from Grand Canyon and Zion and Bryce and Moab and several places. Oh, as you know, Utah has become one of our favorite sites. We've been back there many times to visit all those sites. And I just wrote him a note and said, you know, put on your bucket list a hike rim to rim from the on the Grand Canyon. And so he will, he really would like to do that. And Zion, I mean, Zion, Bryce, he I think he would really like that. And of course, Moab is the biking capital of the world for what do you call it?
Slick rock biking.
Yeah, slick rock biking and so forth. So.
I know. Yeah. Scares the living daylights out of you.
No, it's not as bad. Yeah, there are some dangerous things. These are well-established paths that they bike on. Mountain. I mean, there's mountain biking. That's what they do. That's what mountain bikers do. So anyway, we sent him all that. I just, like I say, wrote him a note and recommended that he the highlight of his life would be hiking rim to rim, but he's got to do a lot of planning because you can't just drive up and park your car and start hiking. You have to have permits and
try. He has good seasoning and training because of the COVID. Even though COVID may go, it may never go away totally. I don't know that. Christmas says there'll be so many variants.
He won't get to go there this year, but I just told him try to get there sometime.
Try to get there sometime.
Before you graduate, but try to get there to do this. Anyway, that's the Grand Canyon. So then we went back to Vernon. Probably, I don't remember, of course, that exactly, but I'm sure we spent a few days with my parents, and then went to Fort Sill, and again had an interesting experience with trying to find a place to live. Of course, there was no place on post. Again, this was 67, when the whole military services were really expanding and all the training was going on and so forth, and Fort Sill was the same as any other post. We literally searched for, I don't know, 2 or 3 days going through all the newspapers. I mean, it wasn't like now with the internet, of course. We didn't have any way to search that. So newspapers were about your only source. And searched for a place to live. There was not a single apartment anywhere in Oklahoma or in Lawton that we could find, and even in the little towns around Lawton. So we finally ended up buying our first place.
Buying a house.
Yeah, we had to buy a house in order to have a place to live. I mean, I couldn't even get a place. I could have sent you and Mom back to Vernon to stay with my parents, but they didn't even have a BOQ. I couldn't even find a place to stay alone or anything. But of course, there's always a house for sale. So we bought a little 2-bedroom house there, and I'm sure you've seen pictures of it and so forth. And although we were only there, it's probably
7 months.
Were we there that long?
Yeah.
It wasn't a year. So we ended up with a house, which I think we paid $15,000 for or something like that at the time, which seems kind of ridiculous now. But because we didn't have $15,000, but we got a loan somehow. I don't remember how that happened. And when we left, we wanted to sell it, but we couldn't find a seller or a buyer right away. And so we ended up keeping it and turning it over to a lady who was a manager of houses and apartments and so forth. And we rented that place for some time. We actually kept that. We stayed there for 6 or 7 months. And then at that time, the artillery was in two branches. It's called field artillery and air defense artillery. And I was in field artillery, but we did combine training. So we were training back and forth between the two branches. And we went to Fort Bliss, Texas then for about 2 months. It wasn't very long. The air defense artillery part of the career course was limited to 2 months, and I think maybe 5 months or 6 months at Fort Sill. But anyway, we had the same problem. And when we got to Fort Sill, I went out early because, again, trying to find a place. I couldn't find a place at Fort Bliss in El Paso. And I went out and stayed in a motel for several days waiting. I had applied to some apartment places and so forth, but didn't know whether we'd get one or not. And so you stayed back, and I know I remember being there alone for a week or two. I don't know how long it was. But anyway, we did finally get an apartment in Fort Bliss and stayed there again a couple of months. And that house was still, it rented. We were lucky. It rented all the time in Lawton. So that kind of turned out okay. And then we kept that house until, well, from there, of course, all of us that were in the career course, we all went to Vietnam from there. And so from Fort Bliss, we went back to Texas for a while. And from there, we split. You and Mom, I'll never forget that. We went to Dallas. My parents took us to Dallas, and we spent the night there in Dallas, somewhere around the airport. I don't know where. But anyway, we had to part there. And what happened? You went back to Vernon.
I went to Europe.
Well, I know you went back to Vernon with them for a while. You didn't leave for Europe from there, did you?
Yes, I did.
So we both, I went one way in the world and you
Correct.
Went the other way. Okay. So
oh,
you.
Lord.
Oh, it was. Yeah, it was. No question about that.
Yep.
Okay. So I went to Vietnam from there, and you and Mom went to Germany. So, yeah, that's what happened.
Yep.
Yeah.
And you met my parents for the first time, and my dad took to you immediately. You could tell that he had missed out on his own children because he had to go to war, and then he was in prison with the Russians. So he missed out on, and he had 1,000% patience with you. He would ask, I bundled you up. It was cold outside. He had a big winter hat on. And he said, can I take her for a walk? And you had learned to walk. You were like two. And you could, not fast, but you could walk. An hour and a half later, I found the two of you, you and your grandpa, like 100 yards away. He said, oh, she found this rock, and then she needed to fill this crack, and then she had to. He was just so patient with you. You could have stood on your head for 2 hours, and he would have watched you. He was the best, and that made me feel good that not only did I visit my parents again and move in with them, but I also did a service to them, that they got to know you and enjoy the baby or a toddler. So it was good for all of us.
And where did we live then?
With my parents in, where was that, Lyman?
No.
Outside of Freiburg, Germany,
uh-huh.
Somewhere.
What was the name of that place? I forgot.
Wasn't Speyer, right? No, it was later.
Well, he had retired then, and so they had moved, well, somewhere near Freiburg or somewhere in the southern part of Germany, wherever that was. So, yeah, that was a hard year, like it was for a lot of us.
So when did you ever leave for Vietnam?
When what?
When did you leave for Vietnam?
May or June. June of 67.
68.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something
yeah.
like that. Yeah, 68.
68.
So I went there. I remember my first sight of Vietnam. We were coming in the middle of the night on a, what they did at those times, and they still do, the military doesn't have enough transport to transport all the soldiers during the war, so they charter. And at that time, Pan Am was a big airline. I don't know if you remember that name or not, but they were around. They were absorbed or went bankrupt or something years ago. But they had those big 747s and carried several hundred people. And so that's what we were flying on. And I remember I was sitting near a window, and so I could look out, and all of a sudden people started hollering, hey, look, look. And so everybody got off to the right side of the plane and looked out, and what we saw were tracer bullets coming out of the sky from some aerial platform. I don't know what it was, but I'll never forget that. It was my first visit to Vietnam where tracers going down, not coming up. It was friendly fire, as far as I know. I mean, I don't really know. But no, the Viet Cong didn't have any, North Vietnamese didn't have any. It was probably a C-130 gunship they had it set those up. C-130 is normally, you know, that your Air Force had a, was a troop cargo transport, but we had them set up with gun platforms, very effective. But anyway, I'll never forget that. I can see that in my mind right now, the dark black sky and with tracers going down to the ground. Of course, everybody was, I mean, we were all rookies at that time in the mid-60s. Nobody had been back for a second tour, so every one of us were rookies. So that was exciting for us to see our first gunfire. Unfortunately, it wasn't our last, but that was my first view of Vietnam was gunfire coming out of the skies, tracers pounding the ground somewhere. So anyway, we flew into Nha Trang, Vietnam. I remember that. I'm not sure I remember that. I think that was Nha Trang we flew into. And just a big airport. I mean, it was just kind of normal. And then we got in processed and, you know, stayed a night or two there in some barracks until they figured out what they want to do, what they wanted to do with us. And then I remember that flying out of there. I think that was on, it wasn't on C-130, but it was, there were a lot of older cargo planes, but they packed us in. We were literally packed in. People were sitting on the floor, standing on top of each other, laying on top of each other and everything else. They just opened the back gate and had us all there in a platoon. And they said, get on the plane. And so we all drug our gear, got on that plane. And it was, again, it was suffocating. I remember just feeling suffocated on that plane to get, I was never so glad to get off an airplane in my life as I was. Flew up into the highlands of Vietnam to the Pleiku area. And I was assigned to the 4th Infantry Division, which had a big base camp there. And so that's where I spent the first 6 months of my first tour in Vietnam, basically behind the wire. I was with division, what's called the Division Artillery Headquarters, and I was the assistant intelligence officer. And so we had been, for some reason, I never have figured that out, but for some reason, we were in charge of base camp defense. And there was our base camp with an infantry division there, although normally there were three infantry brigades with an infantry division, but it was a very large base, a big airfield and a lot of support, et cetera, et cetera. And it was about a mile square, probably, a huge place, all covered with or surrounded by barbed wire and claymore mines. And while I was there, we did a lot of other stuff, built new bunkers and so forth. But that was basically my task was we sent out patrols every night. We would brief them on where to go and where to set up and adjust artillery for them to protect them and stuff like that. So it was basically an office job, if you will, a little bit different of an office job for the first 6 months. And the second 6 months, I was on the promotion list by then. I was a captain when I got there. I was on the promotion list, a major. And so I got assigned to a major's position as an operations officer, again, with an artillery battalion north of Pleiku, up near a town called, or a place called Kontum, town called Kontum. And again, we had we supported an artillery battalion, supported an infantry brigade. Yeah. Okay. So anyway, we'll start there next time. My second part of my tour.
This takes too long.
This may take for 6 months. That's okay. I haven't let you talk.
And we had, so I wrote to your dad every single day, your antics and what I had done. Even though I couldn't mail it, I mailed it like once every 2 weeks. I had to mail it to what was then APO system, American Post Office system. And you never knew if he got it in a week, in a month, in 3 months, you had no clue whenever there was a transport plane that would take a package or postal deliveries with it.
Yeah, I got some really
old.
Okay. I got some really old cookies a few times.